mothers,
and others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs, and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During this series, we'll talk to people from across the industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are me, Liz, hello, and Shelley.
Hi, that's me.
And we're industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guest today is Dale Packard, the General Manager of Music Victoria, the not-for-profit independent voice that champions all things concerning the Victorian music industry. He's had a past life as an active musician, a band tour manager in Europe, and an artist manager, working with people such as Chet Faker, Midnight Juggernauts, Grimes, and many more. Dale is also a dad, and he's combined his love for kids and the music industry by solely directing his own development project, the Club Kids Music Academy. It's become a platform for young children to experiment with electronic music and technology in an educational and creative space. Welcome, Dale, to Music Mothers and Others.
Hi, Shelley. Hi, Liz. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for being here. Hey, Dale, do you mind starting off by just telling us what you think or where you like to see your place in the music industry at the moment? That's lots of hats you've got and lots of different things on your email signatures. But
yeah,
where do you
sure.
like to say you live in the music industry?
Oh, look, my primary role at the moment is as the general manager of Music Victoria. So Music Victoria does a lot of things in supporting the Victorian music industry, but you'd probably say its primary function is to be a advocacy and lobbying group on behalf of the industry. So we're kind of that node in the network that kind of connects government to the music community and music industry. So without an organisation like Music Victoria, you would have every man and his dog in the music sector kind of emailing and calling ministers and advisors and local, state, federal government, and people will be sending different messages, and it'll be very confusing for everyone involved around, okay, well, what actually are the primary needs of the music sector? How do we make sense of all this? And so Music Victoria's role is to kind of, yeah, bring that all together and be an effective communicator. But then, you know, we also, you know, run programs, you know, for artists and for industry to skill up. And we do a big awards show called the Music Victoria Awards, where we give out 20-odd something awards for the best Victorian music and a whole range of other stuff. But, yeah, I guess where I'd sit would be that representative role for the music industry.
Sure, and those side hustles, you don't they're for you, like with the Club Music Academy and stuff like that, the Club Music Kids Academy.
Yeah, so look, I'm still a musician, still a sound engineer, still a director of Club Kids Music Academy. So they're all things that I've developed in earlier stages in my life, and now I want to continue them as much as possible. Look, I love doing sound for bands. So I'm getting behind the mixing desk is something that's kind of been a big part of my life. I still play music, you know, not as much as I used to, but we'll jump and join bands from time to time. And then, yeah, there's the Club Kids Music Academy stuff, which I've been doing for a few years now. And I did an event with Club Kids down at M Pavilion a few weeks ago, and I'm doing it again down at the State Library in a couple of weeks as part of their family takeover day. So yeah, that's awesome.
Can you tell us what that looks like? So kids come along, they have access to what your awesome electronic music collection? Yeah.
So I guess for me, discovering electronic music kind of came a bit later in life than some people. I wasn't kind of going to raves and clubs as a teenager or in my early 20s. I was more into kind of live rock and roll and folk music and that kind of thing. So for me, look, it probably would have been my late 20s that I started to develop an appreciation for, you know, electronic music and techno and that kind of thing, and realised that there was no real space for kids to be engaging in that kind of music. And I also am a big fan of jamming and kind of getting people into kind of just make music on the fly and not get too caught up on the technicalities. And electronic music can be very technical. All about MIDI mapping and kind of using software. There's certainly on the outside that you could see it as there being quite a big barrier to entry for young kids, because like unless you can, have a pretty good grasp on computer software, you're probably going to struggle with creating electronic music. Much easier to just kind of bang a drum or play a recorder or that kind of thing. But I guess I wanted to find a way to bridge that gap. So back to your question, Shelley, what it looks like is I've usually set up about, eight or nine different kind of electronic music stations, usually in a semicircle or something like that. Each station will have a different electronic music instrument. So it could be a sampler or a keyboard or a drum machine or like an effects pedal with a microphone, a theremin. I've got a range of different things that I like to set up.
Theremin's probably the most popular instrument.
The adults love the theremin.
I got one for my 40th. Yeah, they're the best. They're the best things ever.
Well, they're great because you don't even need to be in tune. You can just warble along and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So the idea is that kids can kind of come and jump on one of those stations, and what I try to do, and it's with mixed results, is take all those different inputs and try to turn them into something that sounds like music. So there's a few tricks to doing that, like, volume control, making certain things a bit louder than others, having a pretty solid backing track that kind of carries it all. So that the beat I've usually got pre-programmed, so it kind of has its own rhythm to it. I try to make sure all the sounds that I've got set up at the different stations are more or less in key. Some of the instruments I quantize, so it kind of automatically aligns with the beat. If you're slightly off, it'll move it to being in line. So that those kind of tricks I use so that hopefully it kind of resembles music. But it is very chaotic. Any kind of, I guess trained musicians or music teachers would just have a heart attack.
Don't worry about it. I mean, what's the definition? The definition of music really is humanly organized sound. So, you're humans and you're organizing sound, full stop, it's music.
I'm Dale Packard and you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Can we now take you back to childhood, Dale?
Sure.
And think about the music that you had when you were growing up. And is there any musical memories that you had as a kid? Maybe you encountered some kind of like amazing musical experience like the ones that you provide now. But it could have just even been like a song that really stuck in your head or something like that. Is there anything that really stands out as being an amazing musical memory that you had in your childhood?
Yeah, my whole childhood. My dad is a musician. He's a retired statistician as well, but always made sure music was a big part of his life. He plays double bass and mandolin and a range of different instruments, mainly in the kind of folk bluegrass world.
Would we know his name? Can we know his name?
His name's Bruce Packard. He's not particularly famous, but if you Google Bruce Packard, you'd certainly see a range of different bands that he's played in over the years.
Cool.
But he was very much in that kind of folk festival world. So I don't know, if you're not kind of that involved in folk music, you might not realise this, but there's many, many folk festivals around Australia. Port Ferry, the National, there's lots, and then lots of smaller ones. You can spend a good part of the year just hopping from folk festival to folk festival if that's your vibe, if that's what you want to do. And a lot of people do that. So if you're a folky, as they say, you could easily be just going around to many folk festivals. And that's a big part of what my dad did. He would go to, well over six a year, camping kind of folk festivals, and would be playing in three or four bands usually over the weekend. And I was more or less left to hang out at those festivals and kind of participate and join in And yeah, folk festivals have a real participatory nature to them. There's jam sessions, and you kind of just rock up with a ukulele or whatever it is you've just learned how to play yesterday and join in. That's kind of the vibe of those things. So that was, that was quite formative in my childhood. And naturally I had to reject that as I became a teenager and older, because as you should, you should. So I kind of fell out of love with folk music and got more into like punk and more aggressive music in my kind of later teenage years and early 20s.
Going to drop some names for us, some Angry Young Man music?
Your classic, Minor Threat, Fugazi, the kind of, Ian Mackay vibes, local kind of hardcore bands like Far Left Limit, a lot of kind of local punk stuff.
Awesome. No, I like it. I like it a lot. And do you, from those kind of times, and from seeing that parenting so tied up to music, have you, how is being a parent and being part of the village, how do you negotiate that with your own work now in the music industry? How do you see those two worlds work? Have you taken the model that your dad had with kind of involving family life as much as possible? Have you tried to keep them separate? I mean, obviously you've integrated them a bit with the academy that you've set up, but how do you negotiate between those worlds now?
Look, I guess this is kind of answering your question. I guess before I had kids, I'd spent a lot of time touring with bands, and we'd spend many months of the year with not being based anywhere. I think at one point I even just moved out of my share house because I thought, well, there's no point in me paying rent here because I'm here so infrequently. I'll just, when I'm in Melbourne, I'll just find somewhere to stay. and then now I don't have to pay any rent because I was on tour that much that it was just not worth it. And so that's obviously not a sustainable lifestyle to have with a family. So one of the main changes I made to, I guess, integrate family life with the music industry, I suppose, was to find work within Melbourne that utilised that skill set that I could do without having to go on tour. So that was things like Club Kids, which I can do from here. Things like the job I got at Regional Arts Victoria as their touring manager, so organising tours that went around Australia and Victoria, but not having to actually go on the tours, just being the organiser on the back end. So they're the kind of ways in which I've had to kind of adapt and incorporate those two parts of my life. Sure. Is that kind of what you meant?
No, that's totally it. And it's interesting too, and it's good to hear that, it's something that, male parents think about, or male carers, or just people of the village, because I guess it's the expectation that a woman can't move around or isn't going to want to move around. Mm. It's really important to acknowledge that dads aren't going to want to either. We spoke to Murray Cook a little while ago, who said exactly that too with the Wiggles. A big part of the reason he left the Wiggles was because being away from his family was getting too much,
he was missing out on too much, and just coming back and just feeling that big disconnect because changes in the child's development, like, you're just not around for.
I think in general, if you're incorporating family life with music life, you usually have to find a way to be a bit more locally focused. But that's, I'm aware of musical families that have not done that as well. I've had ones that just kept going and kind of keep touring, but it's pretty hard.
Yeah, well, I imagine tour bus, although, I mean, lockdown
homeschooling in a tour bus, yeah.
Yeah, like it can, look, it has been done, but it's pretty, you have to be pretty committed, and you probably need to have, you either need to be really famous and that's just your life and the family just has to get on board because you've got this insane trajectory, or you've got both partners maybe in the band together, and it's part of what, that's part of their life. So the kid just kind of has to join along. But when you've got kind of one musical person and one not, and it's not a kind of is not a huge money earner, it's a pretty, you kind of need to make some sacrifices.
That probably brings us to our next question, and that is, well, you're knee deep, head deep, shoulders deep in the concerns of the Victorian music industry through your GM job with Music Victoria. And so Liz and I are making a wish list from all the people that we interview about advice for the industry to make it more family friendly or kid friendly or parent friendly. Yeah. What needs to change in this culture in order to make it something that's suitable for people who, you know, who have got these parental concerns?
Yeah. Look, I'll probably give you some answers that you've heard before, because I think
doesn't matter.
I don't know, that they seem, in some ways they seem kind of obvious to me. So, firstly, not everything is for everyone. So it's totally fine to have some kind of events that are not suitable for kids at times that are not suitable for kids, etc. The goal is not to make everything family friendly, but it's to make sure there's enough kind of family-friendly offerings on the table, I would say. Look, one of the barriers is obviously alcohol. So a huge part of the music industry is financed by alcohol. If you look at other performing arts industries, a lot of it has a lot more subsidy from the government. When I was working at Regional Arts Victoria, the idea of putting a theatre tour together and making money or even covering costs from ticket sales was you wouldn't even consider it. Like it was not even in the realm of possibility that you would do that. It was always assumed that everything from the artist fees to the touring costs, pretty much the whole gamut of the tour was financed by funding. So, and that was normal, right? That's not normal in music. In music, you pretty much do it yourself, finance it yourself, and maybe you apply for a grant to kind of cover your flights and accommodation or something. That's kind of more standard. The reason for that is partly because this alcohol sales are kind of financing the music sector in a lot of places. If it wasn't for the alcohol sales, they couldn't afford to do the music that they're doing. So it's interesting. It's not kind of clear. It wouldn't necessarily seem that way at first glance, but it's certainly a big part of it. And that's not to say that's always the case. There's plenty of music that happens that is not finance that way, but that's one of the reasons. So I think what we need to do to make the music industry more integrated with families is to decouple that and to acknowledge that, and to and for probably for the government to say, if we want to value music as a community good, a cultural good, something that we think we want to have in our society, we need to see it like we see parks and libraries and other public institutions that are funded and seen as an asset to the community. So we have to see music in that same way and be financially supported, so they didn't have to rely on alcohol sales. So you could have a family event and still for it still to be viable.
So I think you're right though, Dale. It's interesting. I always think about, you know, what music could learn from the sport industry, you know what I mean? And how we could, you know, because there's no question of its value. There's no question that it gets funded, you know, whereas it seems that we continually have to fight for our right to party. Although, do you find, because you probably see this now too, is it just popular music that's having this problem? Like, is classical music, when classical music goes on tour, is there an expectation they're going to cover their costs?
No, see, classical music's falls into that wider performing arts sector, where it's almost 100% government funded.
Yeah, right. Okay, so it's just...
They've generally got a membership or subscriber-based financial model as well, so they would get money from their subscribers and members. But I haven't looked at their books, but I would say that's a fairly small part of their running costs or income.
Yeah, right.
I would say that there's that expectation with these quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes now, listeners, these sort of high art institutions that ticket prices are going to be quite high anyway to go and see these performances. And someone the other day was actually saying to me about how ticket prices to go and see a band haven't really substantially increased with inflation for, you know, a good 10 years or something like that.
Yeah, that $10 on the door was pretty much the price it was in the 90s, and it's pretty much the price it is now.
Yeah, which is tough, isn't it? Because that's not how everything else has stayed stable, and particularly rents and all that stuff. I mean,
In regards to your sport point, Liz, the other part of sport that's different is the sponsorship and advertising. So it's totally fine, expected and not challenged in sport that you would just have massive billboards across the screen. I mean, if bands were comfortable with doing that.
Imagine that though.
Yeah. I mean,
see the worst. I'd hate it.
If you just saw, I don't know, the Telstra, just across the stage at the Tote or something.
Tame Impala brought to you by Telstra.
Exactly. Yeah. So music could do that if it wants. It's like, I'm sure those companies would love to jump on it.
Well, think about Red Bull. I mean, Red Bull's been sort of, you know, dipping its toes in that pond for a while.
Here's a question, though. I know we're playing, but what would be, is it just that we feel icky about it? Like, what would be the really big issues there?
Look, there's probably a bunch, but there's a feeling like disrupt the artistic integrity of the of the art. It would feel that way because it would feel like you're more like a salesperson than an artist. I mean, but that's the big why. But then you'd have to unpack. Is that a fair position to take at this time in history? I don't know. I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other, actually.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because now you're making me think, how do footballers or cricketers or anybody else feel walking out with, you know, a logo across their chest? Do they care? Do they not care? Do they just think,
I reckon because they've got six and seven figure salaries, they probably are just like, whatevs, as long as I get my...
There's definitely bands that do that these days that are like proudly like align themselves with brands. But it's not for everyone.
That point you make about it can't be for everybody. Like the diversity is important, isn't it? We've just got to let the industry be.
Yeah, and I suppose we're talking a lot about live music at the moment, but are there any other aspects of the music industry that you can think to make it kid-parent more friendly? I mean, the way perhaps behind the scenes, which you've been in, you know, the organisational sort of aspects of the industry or even just the culture of the industry, expectations for working hours or being on call or something like that. Is there any other recommendations you might have?
Look, just doing more things during the day seems like an obvious one. So much of music is support act goes on at 10 p.m. and then the main act goes on at midnight, 1 a.m. More day gigs and just outside of pubs, you know, that seems to be the main thing.
Yeah, no, that makes
sense. But you were talking about not just live music, weren't you?
Yeah, anything else? I mean, just because we've spoken to promoters and publicists and things like that, and in our first series of Music Mothers and Others, and some of the feedback has been, well, young bands might have this expectation that they can actually call me at 10 p.m. and, you know, expect me to handle a problem at 1 a.m. and I'm actually breastfeeding with a kid that's half asleep. And they think it's okay. But I'm also, you know, we've also had some guests, haven't we, Liz, say that I don't want to reveal that I actually have got kids and I have to do a school pickup at 3 o'clock because I don't want people to know in case they, you know, change their perceptions about how my ability to operate in this job is.
Yeah, look, I guess there's been some things I've noticed recently that were encouraging in that area. It was there was a director of an organisation that we work quite closely with at Music Victoria kind of made the point at the start of a meeting going, we understand we're all working from home here, so all kind of interruptions from kids and pets are kind of not only okay but encouraged. Really went that extra mile to say, have your kids like jump in on the meeting, or that's totally fine. We're in your home. Why wouldn't they? And it was really lovely. And there's been a couple of times like that when kids have kind of jumped in on meetings, and instead of the person kind of pushing them out of the way, going move out of the way, I'm doing this, they've kind of just kind of put them on their lap or kind of kept going. And that kind of stuff that normalizes integrating work and family life was really encouraging to me.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, hopefully some good will come out of COVID. If that's it, we'll take it. We normally just ask our guests to finish the sentence for us, the kids and I are listening to, just to tell us a bit about what you're listening to with the little people in your life. And it can be your kids, it can be cousins, it can be friends, it can just be, you know, desperate attempts to find out what the young people are doing these days if you're back on TikTok. But do you mind just finishing the sentence for us and just saying the kids and I are listening to and telling us what's going on in your world?
Sure. Look, the kids and I are listening to what I now think is called SoundCloud rap or emo rap. Do you guys know what that is?
Tell us. I don't know what that is.
We have no idea what that is.
I'm just going to, Rudy's here. My son's here. He's going to tell you about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Rudy.
Oh, cool.
Hey, Rudy. How's it going?
Can you tell them about some of the music that you like at the moment and that we've been listening to?
Okay. Well, I've sort of been enjoying songs that are like slowed down. I feel like they slowed down songs,
pitch down
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, so they're like an impossibly low voice to sing, kind of that way.
Yeah.
How do you sing along to that stuff, Brudy?
It's not that hard. I just sing it as it's the normal song, like not slowed down at all.
Oh, and why do you like that? What do you like about it?
It feels like it's not just like rock, but it's still good to listen to.
Yeah, he likes kind of modern kind of rap and R&B. What are some of the artists? Like there's Juice WRLD.
The Kid Laroi.
XXXTentacion.
Oh, yeah.
Tentacion, is how you pronounce it. Lil Peep.
Yeah, Lil Peep.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. You got your baby gangster on over there.
Yeah.
My
yeah, he's got it going on.
Love it. And where do you guys listen to that? Is it just while you're, doing the dishes, putting out the tea, putting out the cutlery, or is it just you lock yourself in your room and crank it up?
In the car mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like going to school. Yeah. Car.
Yeah, car.
We'll let you go. Thanks for letting us borrow your dad, Rudy. That's the best. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dale.
Bye.
Catch you later.
Bye.
That's fun.
Music, Mothers and Others is written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt and edited by Nina Longfellow. We're broadcast on 2SER and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. Visit us on Instagram and Facebook to find out who our upcoming guests will be. See you next time.